Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in Dallas. All right, don't bother trying to make sense of what we saw this Sunday in the NFL. The late Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, the foremost authority on the National Football League, before yours truly, couldn't decipher what we saw yesterday. Week 15 was as wacky as I've ever seen. The long dead Falcons dropped the 49ers from the number one seed to the number five seed in the NFC when Julio Jones grazed the goal line with 2 seconds to play. Minshew mania spoiled the final NFL game at Oakland Coliseum and set off chaos inside the black hole. The Buffalo Bills won a 10th game for the first time in 20 years.
Yeah.
Week 15 was so crazy that Tampa Bay's Jameis Winston looked like the best quarterback in the league, tossing 4 touchdowns in a romp. I haven't even mentioned the craziest thing I saw this weekend, the Dallas Cowboys. No, I'm not talking about Dak Prescott's coin flip fiasco where he almost gave the Rams the ball at the start of each half. I'm talking about the Cowboys beating a team with a winning record for the first time all season. Dallas dominated the Rams, the defending NFC champs, a team we thought had caught fire. The Cowboys bulldozed Los Angeles 44-21, rushing for 263 yards and 3 touchdowns. The outcome likely ended Los Angeles' playoffs hopes and justified, in Jerry Jones' mind, the Cowboys' decision to stick by embattled coach Jason Garrett. Yeah, Week 15 was wild and confusing. It was also meaningless. Nothing happened. Don't believe any of it. Pretend like it was all a dream. Jameis Winston did not prove he's Tampa Bay's long-term answer at quarterback, and all Gardner Minshew is Ryan Fitzpatrick with a handlebar mustache rather than a ZZ Top beard. And please God, don't jump on the Cowboys bandwagon. Dallas's victory said far more about the Rams than the Cowboys. Sean McVay and Jared Goff caught lightning in a bottle last season. They did not build a sustainable culture. In football, culture trumps talent. That explains Bill Belichick and the Patriots' 2 decades of dominance. Los Angeles is a Lakers town, an NBA city. In basketball, talent trumps culture. Any problem can be addressed with the acquisition of talent. Trade for Wilt and Kareem or buy Shaq and LeBron. That's how things are done in L.A. The Rams bought in. It worked a year ago. Their collection of stars created a Super Bowl team until the very moment they ran into Belichick's Patriots. This year, Jalen Ramsey hasn't helped one bit. The money spent locking up Goff has been a total waste, same as the money spent on Todd Gurley. Dallas won because the Rams are no good, particularly at quarterback. Dallas is no good because Jerry Jones runs the Cowboys like a Los Angeles team. He invests in talent more than culture, and his quarterback isn't that good. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Hall of Fame tight end and one of the NFL's top 100 of all time.
My dog!
Tony Gonzalez.
Cream of the crop.
That's even better than Hall of Fame. That all right, we'll start with you, Marcellus.
Hey, brother.
Did the Cowboys prove anything with the win yesterday?
They actually did. I think this is a wild card team. And I'm not talking about just the fact that they're going to play in the wild card round, but just there's a stranger danger to them, like a fear of the unknown when you play against the Cowboys. We've all been there before. The psychology of playing a team that is inconsistent. You may look at that same team and say, they're not that good or they're underachievers. And that's going to be disadvantage to you and your team. You don't know what to think of the Cowboys, except when the Cowboys use their formula, which is the running game to get their offense going, and then the defense shows up as it did yesterday in that first half. If that team shows up with the talent that they have, you're right, Jason, it's not about their culture. It's about how talent trumps all. And in a 4-game season, when we're talking about wild card, divisional, championship, Super Bowl, I wouldn't bet against them in a conference where the 49ers are beatable. So who are you scared of? This is a wild card team that you don't know what they're going to present.
Talent does not trump culture. And I do believe that's how it was said, is that talent in football doesn't trump culture. First of all, yes, they did prove something by their win. They proved that they can play at the level that people maybe expected them to be playing at far before now, long before now. But when you're wildly inconsistent, and they've been very, very inconsistent, you look at the issues, hearing all of the sound bites coming from the owner / GM. You hear the is there going to be a Jason Garrett or not? There's so many issues that have been discussed for so long. You got to know that those things still exist. And is this a team that you're just going to say based off of one good showing against a pretty good team, not an elite team this year, a pretty good team, that now all of the woes that have plagued them during the course of this season are now gone? I don't see them even making the playoffs.
Really?
We're going next week. I think they did prove something. And more importantly, I would think that they proved something to themselves. And like you said, this team is wildly inconsistent. They were pretty good at the beginning of the season. Everybody was jumping on the bandwagon, including me, saying, wow, talented roster. They're going to go far this year. And that's the thing that disappoints me, but also can excite me. Remember, this is what goes on in December is what you remember as a team. And if you can get hot now, you can ride that into the playoffs. Yes. Can they continue what they did yesterday? They dominated the line of scrimmage on offense and the defensive line of scrimmage. And they held Todd Gurley to 1 yard for 6 carries at halftime, 11 yards total throughout the game. Ezekiel was running his butt off, but that offensive line was blocking one of the best men to ever play the defense position, defensive tackle position, Aaron Donald yesterday. They were getting after him. And I think it's a reflection of Jason Garrett. And I think the Rams are the same thing, like that wildly inconsistent team this year. Why can you play so well yesterday and not play well last week? That's what Bill Belichick. So I love your point. Bill Belichick teams don't do that. They bring it every single week. That's what good coaches do. They get their guys to play hard every week. Can Jason Garrett get them to have that same effort and that same sense of urgency that they had yesterday that wasn't there? It was like they were quitting the last couple weeks, not playing as hard as they could, but they did yesterday. If they do that every week, Jason, I'm telling you, to every Cowboy fan out there, get excited, because they have talent. They could win. They could go on a run here.
So why wouldn't I just conclude, like, I've seen teams run on the Rams this year, and I've seen the Rams offensive line have problems this year.
Yeah.
And I saw a Rams team that reverted back to what has been the norm all season. They're a disappointment. The Cowboys a bit more desperate in a must-win situation. Both teams had to win. But I just think the Cowboys, when am I going to see them run for 263 yards again? That's not a formula that they're going to duplicate again based off what we've seen this year.
Well, we saw a fully motivated Seattle Seahawks team not even score a touchdown against this Rams team. So that Rams team then comes in with that momentum, and they're fully motivated because they're fighting for their season, and they run against a team that was fully motivated in the Cowboys. But more importantly, in the short term, short scope, is as talented as any team out there. That's why in the long scope, let's talk culture all day. Well, quarterback and overpaid. Let's talk long scope culture. Let's talk 4-game season. If you want to count the next 2 6-game season, that talent, you have to all of a sudden start to respect it fully if they can show up upstairs.
I don't think they're going to beat Philly. And when you look at...
I disagree with you.
Philly, and that's fine.
They are limping.
I don't think they're going to beat Philly. Okay. And then now we're having the conversation after the game next week about how Dallas went back to what you just said about the Rams, reverting back to the old ways. You're stopping Ezekiel Elliott away from impacting the game. You are a couple completed passes away from having a good showing against a Dallas defense. We've seen what Dallas has been in a larger sample size of what they're not doing the right way versus the sample size of what we saw them do correctly against this Rams team. I'm not buying it. I mean, you guys sound positive about it.
No, not me.
I think that it's great to say that they had a great showing. I think it was a great showing yesterday. You saw the potential of what it could be. But to say that, I'm not going to look at everything that took place in weeks before prior to this performance and not base my assessment off of that. I don't see them beating Philly this upcoming week.
I think it's simple. It's Jason Garrett. If Jason Garrett, I don't know what he did this week. Maybe he didn't do anything
different.
Highlight
reel.
What did he do?
Yeah, he showed the highlight reel midweek.
He showed them how good they are.
Show another highlight reel. Show some Rocky films. I don't know. Remember the Titans, whatever it takes. Get these guys in that same mindset. And that's what great coaches do. Am I right about that? Yeah. I mean,
no question.
How about just show them this game? Just put this game on repeat and say, guys.
Let's do this.
That was the team that was in the Super Bowl last year.
Right, let's transition to the why I'm not high on the Cowboys, and it's the Rams. Mm. And the question here is Sean McVay closer to being the next Mike Martz or the next Sean Payton?
Oh, okay. much closer to being the next Sean Payton, but why stop there? Look, in his second year, he had a team in the Super Bowl. Think about that. In his second year, a team that he inherited a quarterback, and Jared Goff, who you're not too high on, and I understand why, and he inherited Todd Gurley in those knees, and he took that team to the Super Bowl when that was a four-win team just a couple years ago. Now, let's look at Mr. Sean McVay in terms of where he ranks amongst great coaches all time. In his first three seasons, look at those names. Better start with still two games remaining than Mike Tomlin, Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Bill Walsh, and Bill Belichick. Now, usually somebody at the sports bar say, you trying to say he's going to be Bill Belichick? I'm saying, no, he's on pace to be even better than Bill Belichick. But I don't know where he's going to land. But his takeoff right now in his first three seasons is second to none. So Sean Payton, if not even better. Don't forget, Sean Payton's only won one Super Bowl.
Mike Martz looked good early.
Oh, yeah, but with a franchise quarterback in New Orleans and Drew Brees, one Super Bowl. You trying to tell me he can't win one Super Bowl in his career? I think so.
That's an egregious
What?
That's totally egregious to think that he's going to outpace and be better than a Belichick. I don't.
No, he doesn't say that.
I don't.
he said Sean Payton.
No, Sean Payton.
No, yeah. All of them.
No.
He's on the list.
Did you say he's going to outpace Belichick or Sean Payton?
I don't know
Payton?
Where he's going to land, but he's on pace to outpacing Belichick.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard what he said. Yeah. That's egregious.
That's egregious. It wasn't egregious Belichick's first 3 years to say that.
Yeah, that's. But Belichick Belichick didn't have his success until his second time around.
Yeah, we
got
know.
To the New England Patriots.
Even more to my point.
I think he's more to the point of a Mike Martz. I think that Martz had a successful career. I think that he led a very, very talented group of men to a Super Bowl and came up short, just like what McVay did with his Super Bowl team. I think it was lightning in a bottle. Personally, whoa. I think it was lightning in a bottle. The more you get book on a coach, the better that coach has to be moving forward. You are seeing book taking place against Sean McVay this season. Personnel-wise, they had a superior personnel grouping last year. They lost some very key pieces in the offseason. Coming into this year, everybody thought that Aaron Donald would continue on the trajectory. He didn't have the type of season that people thought he'd have. Goff is not playing at the level that people would expect. And Gurley is all but disappeared, except for maybe one or two games during the course of this year.
Ooh.
Those aren't recipes where you'd say this is a guy that's trending up versus
what?
Possibly.
Do you remember Todd Gurley outside the Rookie of the Year campaign having 25 out of 26 straight games without 100 yards? You remember Jared Goff, who was 0-7, couldn't do a damn thing, became a franchise quarterback under this same guy? And Mike Martz is unfair comparison. Mike Martz never got a job after he did his wonder and lightning in a bottle in St. Louis. You saying that this guy, Sean McVay, will never get another job?
No, I'm not saying he's not going to get another job.
So he doesn't map on to Mike Martz.
No, I'm not saying he's not going to get another job. What I'm saying is he's closer to a Mike Martz in terms of where I see his coaching trajectory versus a Sean Payton.
I think it comes down to personality. And look at Sean McVay. Sean McVay. When you watch him in meetings and he's doing his press conferences, from what I've heard, I've actually had a chance to hang out with him a couple of times. As long as he's willing to keep learning, I think he's going to be fine. Mm. Now, he went all in. I think they made a mistake by giving all these guys that much money, and now they're stuck with them, where Belichick doesn't do that. If he had copy genius. Copy Belichick, and I think he's smart enough to do that. I think he'll figure this thing out. He needs to. His biggest problem is he can't be wanting to be so liked, and I think that comes from young coaches. They want to be liked by the locker room. Mm. If he can get over that part of his game, then I think that he can go out there and do something great in this league.
Look, culture is the word that I used in the essay to start this out, and it speaks to why I think this guy's going to end up more Martz than Sean Payton.
Mm.
I think it's harder to establish a football-type culture in Los Angeles than it is in some of the other cities around the country. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Boston Celtics, the New England Patriots, the Boston Red Sox, hell, even the Boston Bruins have had incredible success with their sports franchises because there's something unique and analytical and intellectual about the culture surrounding Boston. Hmm. Here in Los Angeles, one of the reasons why everybody got paid is because that's what you do here in Los Angeles. This is the land of superstars and glitz and glamour. And so Stan Kroenke running his team in order to compete, just to, in order to get people to come to the stadium. Man, we better fill this up with as many stars as possible and create the illusion that this team is the same as Magic and Kareem and Kobe and Shaq and LeBron James, because that's what you do in Los Angeles. It's a city that is instant gratification. The pace and the methodical nature of football doesn't fit this culture. And so I think Sean McVay could be a classic great football coach, but he's caught in a culture that's microwave and not the best to grow a football culture that's sustainable. And they're always going to be overpaying for guys like Jared Goff and others, because that's what you do here in Los Angeles.
I just want to surmise that we're hearing right now about a coach that won 11 games, 13 games, and maybe 10 games that he's going to flame out. I see no indications of that. I don't think it's an insult to
compare him to Mike Martz versus Sean Payton.
Do you remember what this was before he took over?
Yes.
It was ugly.
Jeff Fisher was they were struggling. And I don't think that you take away from what McVay's accomplishments have been. But, again, to show those numbers and to insinuate that he's heading towards being better than a Belichick.
How about the question, Sean Payton, what is that ceiling? That's one Super Bowl and competitive all the time. Is that unfathomable?
But Sean Payton's one bad call away from possibly.
Oh, here we go. He's a one touchdown
I
away
think from both of y'all make good points.
Thank you.
I really do. I get where you make an excellent point. Like, hey, man, look at the results. Mm. And to say Mike Martz, that's kind of extreme.
That's harsh.
But if I got to choose, I just think Sean Payton and the culture he's established in New Orleans, I think it's going to be hard to duplicate. I think Sean McVay is a hell of a coach. He might be trapped in the wrong franchise and in the wrong city for consistent success.
12 straight years they didn't make the playoffs before Sean McVay brought his young butt to L.A. I'm just saying, he turned around a culture already. Now the steps to take to the Super Bowl championship.
He turned around a team.
No, he's turned around a team.
But 12 years? That's the organization.
But he's also, to me, though, overpaid for a very mediocre quarterback that they're going to be dealing with.
That's called Les
Snead. The next 2 or 3
years. We'll talk about Les Snead another block.
All right, stick around.
Here's an honest question. How are you supposed to know what to do with your money? Very few of us are exposed to meaningful advice on how to manage our finances. Even fewer have the means to get professional financial guidance. Betterment is a platform that was built to do something radical, to give accessible financial advice that puts you first. If you're like most Americans, your money is probably sitting in a savings account, likely earning next to nothing. Maybe you have an investment account that you're not really sure what to do with. Betterment can help you make sense of what to do with your money. Investing involves risk, but you don't have to know the ins and outs of the stock market to start saving more or start investing for your future. Betterment's technology will put your money to work, choosing the stocks and the strategies that are right for you, because we know you have other things to do. Betterment's platform can even provide guidance on what financial goals make sense for you. Give your money a new home with Betterment, peace of mind included. Download the Betterment app today. That's BETTERMENT for the betterment of you.
Tony Gonzalez is back. Joining us now is Fox Sports NFL analyst and the man now with the second most rushing yards in a season for a quarterback.
Silver medalist.
The runner-up.
Time now for a big story presented by Hyundai.
Oh, man.
Patrick Mahomes looked like his old self, throwing for 340 yards and 2 touchdowns as the Chiefs beat the Broncos in a near blizzard 23-3. Kansas City's defense is usually an area of concern, but they appear headed in a positive direction, allowing just 45 points combined during their current four-game winning streak. The Chiefs won't be the one seed in the AFC. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens will most likely lock up that with a win this week. But with Tom Brady showing his age and Mahomes returning to his MVP form, one could argue that the Chiefs are the biggest threat to Baltimore right now. And that is the question, but it's bigger than just the AFC. Mm. In the entire NFL, are the Chiefs the biggest threat to the Ravens?
Yeah, I would say so. I never left that wagon just waiting for Mahomes to kind of round back into form MVP level. We knew two of his last three games, that wasn't Patrick Mahomes under 200 yards a couple of those games. But I'm glad you highlighted the defense, and that's the biggest difference. We talked about it early in the season. What would the Chiefs look like this year defensively with Spagnuolo and Spags out there having his fingerprints on this defense? Well, last year, this was a team that was not one play away from the Super Bowl, but one penalty away from the Super Bowl with the 31st ranked defense. This year, they're trending upward all the way to 18th. And I remember talking about it on the show. We said if they get top 20 defensively with this offense and those weapons, oh, they're going to be scary. A team that beat Baltimore not only this year, but last year with Lamar Jackson has confidence against that team. I say they're the biggest threat.
And I reiterate that again. The Chiefs beat the Ravens twice. They beat them last year when Lamar was young, fairly getting into his groove. But this year they beat him early in the season. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes has got to attack all areas of the field. And I know this was before they got Marcus Peters. But when you got a guy like Patrick Mahomes who can do it all, then every defense, you know, can be put up under duress. So I think they're the biggest threat to the Ravens because the Ravens haven't faced too many quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes. So I'm eager to see what this matchup is going to look like. It might not be at home for Kansas City because that's where both of the wins took place. Mm. It'll be on the road.
Yeah, I agree with both you guys, absolutely. But, I mean, you still look at out of every team in the league, that means you're saying that the Chiefs are the second-best team in the league right now. Are they the second-best team in the league right now?
No.
I don't know. I still like the 49ers, a healthy 49ers, with everybody there. I still like the Saints. The Saints are still a really good football team. Looking at them with the Chiefs, because Chris Jones coming back, defensive tackle being healthy, Frank Clark can finally be worth that paycheck. Because before, at the beginning of the season, he wasn't playing up to what I thought he was going to. But now he's looking really good coming around the edge. And that's just going to help everybody. If them, it doesn't matter. They don't with Patrick Mahomes and that whole offense, they're going to score when the lights come on. Andy Reid, what he does, he is a genius, one of the best coaches of all time. You're going to have a team that can keep up with them scoring. And now with that defense stopping people, Super Bowl. I'm thinking Super Bowl.
I'm an old man. And I'm old school. The Chiefs can't run the football. I don't respect it. Mm. And that's what's going to bite them in the rear end in the postseason, in my view. The biggest threat to me, and again, I do like the way the Chiefs defense is trending. I've been very critical, particularly of their middle linebackers. They're playing better. I got to give them credit. Having said that, I don't trust the Chiefs or Andy Reid as much as I trust Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints. The Saints, to me, are the biggest threat to the Ravens. I trust their defense more. I trust their head coach more. I trust their running game more than I do the Chiefs. There's going to come a time when the Chiefs are going to have to close out a game and they can't run the football. And I know Patrick Mahomes, to me, is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. He's the best quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion. He's not the MVP. Lamar is.
Yeah.
But they can't run the football, that's going to bite them in the rear end.
Yeah, but if you can't put up the points, like we know that running the football, throwing the football is a means to an end, which is scoring. And the defense, especially two of the last three games, 10 points or fewer. You talk about a defense that's going out there and playing stout and taking the ball away from other teams. So let's just look at the top. And you talk about the NFC with the 49ers sitting there dogfight with the Saints. But then you see that same Saints team and 49ers team can't get past Atlanta. So you say there's a formula to beating this team. When I look at the Chiefs, what I realize is this team can travel. They've actually lost more games at home this year, crazy enough, Arrowhead, than they have on the road. So this is a team that can take this on the road with a quarterback who's rounding into form in part because of the injury midseason. I just think it's all coming together right at the perfect time.
What makes the Chiefs so dangerous, like Tony said, you got Andy Reid. He's the guy that makes the ship go. I mean, he spends countless hours, you know, cooking up plays and coming up with concepts. And any defense that he faces, he's going to break it down to a T. And that's what makes Patrick Mahomes' job so easy. That's why I think when you can score points and like you said, they can't run the football, Andy will turn those screens and those short passes into runs, you know, which will be equivalent to just moving the ball like you would be in the run game.
But, Mike, you've been a franchise quarterback where wins and losses are on your back, but there's nothing like a four-minute offense. There's nothing like you've done your job and then let me turn around and hand the ball off and let somebody else and the offensive line bring this victory home. That's where I think is going to bite the Chiefs.
The thing is to not get yourself in that position. But, you know, ball control is something that they're going to have to do or they have to bring out, you know, throughout the course of the game. But it's all in timing and it's all in when you run the football and when you have to. You just got to mix it up and make it look like, you know, it's something that, you know, you can do at any given time as far as running the football.
Are they a better football team than they were last year?
Defensively.
Yeah. Offensively, I would say maybe they're maybe a little bit below.
A little bit below.
But they have all the same players.
No, I'm going to disagree with you. Mm-hmm. The numbers won't say it. I do think this is a better offense. I think these guys are all so set in their roles and so comfortable that they can flip a switch. I watched this game yesterday. And it was like they were playing against high school kids. Everybody was all Patrick Mahomes out here playing in the snow like it was perfect condition.
Yeah.
I've never seen that kind of accuracy. Yep. And to see Tyreek Hill, he was running just as fast, just as sure. It was amazing to me. And so the numbers may be down for them offensively, but in terms of the passing game, they are better than they were last year. The problem is the lack of a run. They miss Kareem Hunt.
But yes, what about Damian Williams? He's going to be back here pretty soon. He was just starting to get going. You got the old man McCoy who can still get it going. I don't know. But here's what it is. When it comes to playoff football and you just look at the stats, it doesn't matter what you do during the regular season. In fact, the winning teams during the regular season hardly ever get to the Super Bowl. I don't have the numbers to back that up.
No, you don't.
But it's true. No, but it's true. Honestly,
I've seen have gone to like 12 of the last 20 Super Bowls.
But it can also be unpredictable. I was talking to Michael Strahan, and when they went to the Super Bowl and won, they were 9-7.
But that's
it
an
happens.
Outlier proving the rule.
I don't know
record.
If it's outliers. I would love to see the numbers. Get one of your stats. Didn't you got some stat people around
I know for a fact 12 of 20 of the top seed. I just saw it yesterday watching football.
But it's
being
hot.
A top seed.
It's about getting hot.
I do have some numbers to push back on the offense is better. Had to do a little research right here. All right, this year's offense has scored 30-plus points 6 times. Last year, 14 times. Like
Patrick Mahomes was hurt.
Yeah, but I just think that last year, and part of it was a surprise element, seeing it all come together versus now you see it coming, which is a little easier to prepare for. So, look, it's still a top 5 offense, whatever you want to think of them. But because of the balancing act with the defense, I think this is more of a threat this year to the entire league. And they may get the scenario, they win out, New England loses one game against the Bills or Dolphins.
Which could happen.
New England has to come there for the divisional game, not the whole AFC championship game. Everything's on the line. We know that it's still a do or die situation, but that may play into the psychology of the Chiefs. You catch the New England early while they're still going through their offensive struggles.
Whitlock and Wiley, Michael Vick and Tony Gonzalez are back. Let's move to Santa Clara, where the 49ers dropped a heartbreaker to the Falcons, thanks in large part to this game-winning touchdown from Julio Jones. It was initially ruled short of the goal line, but after review, it was determined Julio had crossed the goal line, giving the Falcons a wild 29-22 win. It wasn't all bad news for the Niners, who clinched a playoff spot thanks to the Rams losing in Dallas, but the loss to the Falcons was costly for San Francisco, who go from the 1 seed all the way down to the 5 seed in the NFC. All right, the question is, should we be worried about the 49ers after yesterday's loss?
Yeah, we should. Everyone knows about the injuries, 4 defensive starters out yesterday. Since week 9, you look at them giving up 26 points a game. But more importantly, I want to use something Michael Irvin says a lot. He always says, judge a man by the distance traveled. Well, I'm going to judge this 49ers team by the distance traveled. Last year, this was a 4-win team. And you think about that distance to go from that to where just last week they were the number one seed and Super Bowl contender, if not favorite for some, maybe that's just too wide a distance. Maybe they're going to fall somewhere short of that, kind of like the L.A. Rams. Take a four-win team and 2 years later in the Super Bowl, but that distance traveled, respecting what you said about culture earlier and knowing that they have the talent, but if the injuries get in the way and still as a collective you don't have that culture, that maturity that's necessary to finish the deal, not just get close, I think we should be worried about this team.
I don't think you should be worried. I mean, when you look at the injuries, that has to be accounted for. I mean, you need your marquee guys on the field, and then your team is just going to be that much better. And then you look at the track record. I mean, I would think that Dan Quinn knows a little bit about Shanahan and his offense about them spending some time together in Atlanta. So that could have made it difficult. But the 49ers team, to me, is a strong football team. You know, and sometimes, like we just talked about, that number one seed is not good. So maybe all the pressure that stemmed from that, you know, it's probably taking a toll on this team down the stretch. But right now, this gives them a chance to get some guys back healthy, get back focused, and get ready to compete in the playoffs, because that's what's most important right now.
Yeah, I'm getting a little concerned, a little bit. I think offensively, where yesterday we saw it, you can't have your tight end be your number one guy. And I've been there. I'm just telling you, very rarely. I'm talking the guy who catches all the yards, who catches all the passes.
Yeah.
You got to have that over-the-top receiver. I think Emmanuel Sanders. He had one catch yesterday. Deebo Samuel had two catches. And Kittle had 13. They need to find that balance on that offensive side of the ball. Otherwise, you will not beat really good football teams. You'll beat their average teams. But when you go up against, last week, they played well. Emmanuel Sanders had 157 yards receiving. I just think they better get that tweaked and get more balance on that side of the ball, get back to running the ball like they have been. And defensively, like you said, you need Sherman out there. You need D Ford coming off the edge. You need those starters on the defense.
I'm going to pump the brakes here and have you explain this tight end thing, because that's fascinating, because I just saw a story this weekend that the NFL is about to start paying tight ends more, that the value of tight ends is escalating around the NFL, partially because of George Kittle, partially because of the way Lamar Jackson uses his tight ends. Yeah. I'm talking to one of the greatest tight ends of all time, and you're telling me you can't have a tight end-driven passing game?
Well, you can't. First of all, it's about time. They should have been paying these guys. The most important position on the field besides quarterback. We do it all. We block. You see George Kittle block yesterday?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
That was a pancake.
The man smiling about it.
Yes.
So what they do as far as an offense, yeah, but I believe, at least I've seen it, I had the most catches on the team, the most yards, most touchdowns, and then you don't even go to the playoffs with that. It's hard to sustain, and when you got to have those guys that get behind the defense, that can make plays, you got to have the receivers in order to complement that offense to be a full balance offense. Don't get me wrong, pay these guys. It's a mismatch, but you got to have that guy to go with it.
I am worried about the 49ers for the same reason I've been worried all season. I'm not a huge Jimmy G guy. And they didn't put up enough points yesterday against a bad Falcons team. And I know this is a trap game. They played the Ravens, then the Saints, and then they finished with the Rams and the Seahawks. And so here's a garbage team allegedly on the schedule. But it's at home, and you need to take care of your business. And to me, Jimmy G didn't put enough points on the board. The defense is missing four starters. I understand why Atlanta scored some points. Hell, they got Julio Jones. I think he's the best receiver in football. I get why Atlanta was able to score some points. I don't understand why at home the 49ers didn't put 30 on these guys. You know, the Falcons are looking for a reason to quit. They never gave him one. And then they got cold cocked at the end of the game. Jimmy G is a good quarterback. I just don't know if he's great. I don't know if he's good enough in a very competitive situation. There's a lot of good teams at the top. If against Aaron Rodgers, I think he loses that matchup. Drew Brees, I think he loses that matchup. Kirk Cousins, I think he loses that matchup in the postseason. G's good, but not great.
Even though they beat both of those teams, you gave an example. I don't want to see him again, right?
Yeah.
The injury's bad timing, obviously, but I think it's masking what we've seen go wrong in the last 4 weeks with this team. As a collective defense, only one interception. This was a team that was opportune in terms of turnovers earlier in the year. And that's what you just have to look at. Like, Are you playing your best football right now? Playing against the Saints, I don't know. Did that take a chunk of flesh out of them? Did that expose them? Did teams start? Yeah. Even Atlanta says, oh, we got something for you. And Yick only scored 22 points. It just seems like it's a little bad timing in terms of all these issues.
What really concerns me is Emmanuel Sanders having one catch. As good as they run the football in the zone read run game, you mean to tell me you can't get Emmanuel Sanders open on a couple different concepts? Because that's what's going to keep the defense at bay and allow the offense to flow smoothly. And then you can score at will pretty much. I just think it's the easy thing for Kyle Shanahan to be able to use Emmanuel Sanders for the main reasons that they got him. And I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying Emmanuel Sanders has to be one of the focal points in the offense. Tony alluded to George Kittle being the guy who had 13 catches yesterday.
Yeah.
No, Emmanuel Sanders has to be a bigger part of the offense.
Here's why I raised the Kyle Shanahan question is because we've seen in Philadelphia the complaints that the quarterback has fallen in love with Zach Ertz. And has Jimmy G – because I just can't – Kyle Shanahan, I'm sure he has no problem with Emmanuel Sanders. They acquired him. They want him out to make plays. Mm. Has Jimmy G fallen in love with George Kittle?
Yes.
Is that a problem?
He has. He has. I think we all have as a country. Everybody loving watching – I love watching this guy.
Right.
But he had 17 targets yesterday to George Kittle.
Goodness.
17.
That's too many.
That's
too many.
I'm wondering if I've ever had that. Once in my whole career. That's too much for one guy, period.
That's too much.
But let alone a tight end who's usually getting the ball underneath. He's not getting the ball over the top. And so it's tough. But I like your point. They have been battle-tested, though. That's the thing that's maybe the saving grace. Who's had a tougher schedule than the San Francisco 49ers?
And let's play that schedule out. All right, the Rams, Seahawks, as you mentioned. If they lose those games, they could be limping into the playoffs, losing four of their last five ball games. Where's your confidence there? Where's your momentum at that time? So they have to finish strong despite being injured.
Yeah.
So how do you play that out mentally? You know you're in the playoffs, but then do you mash the gas because, well, we're injured. We need to protect ourselves for the playoffs. But then going in, losing four or five and two divisional games, which is going to be difficult as well, chunk of flesh, man.
You're asking guys like Carson Wentz with no weapons to go out and win games. There's no exception for Jimmy G. He got to put the team on his back and will him to win.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this before we go, Mike. Have you ever found yourself, you falling in love with a particular receiver and go to him too much?
Algie Crumpler. I mean, and just like we talked about, he was a guy that was probably one of my best receivers
tight
on
end.
The field. Tight end. He was my tight end. And, yes, I did pay too much attention to where he was going to be on the field looking for the mismatches all the time. And sometimes my receivers, they became disgruntled. But it was because of the way our offense was built. I had to rely on this guy, and it can happen. But I had to expand my mind and, you know, my vision to be able to stretch the ball and attack all areas of the field.
LeVar Arrington is back. Joining us now is Fox Sports NFL analyst and Steelers legend, future Hall of Famer James Harrison.
I know.
All right, let's head to Pittsburgh, where the Bills beat the Steelers 17-10 and clinched their second playoff berth in the past three seasons. Buffalo can still win the AFC East, which is pretty incredible. Mm. We consider the last time the Patriots didn't win their division was way back in 2008. All right, question here is, do you believe the Bills are better than the Patriots
right now? No, because we know early in the season they weren't better than the Patriots because they lost to the Patriots. And what has changed since then, I guess, is why we have this question. To me, not enough for Buffalo to trump the Patriots. One, I saw the game last night. Everybody did. Four interceptions and you win by seven? That's not good. Yeah, that's not enough. That's not showing me that you guys have enough firepower to take advantage of a team when you get those types of turnovers. And let's talk about that firepower or lack thereof. Eight of their games, they've had 20 or fewer points. So that's the thing. They rely on their defense, but the offense doesn't live up to their side of the responsibility many a time. So that's what happened in the Patriots game. It was just a low-scoring affair. Both defenses go out there. Patriots defense still playing well, but the moxie, the ownership, at least even mentally. Tom Brady over the Buffalo Bills, 31-3 overall, 15-1 at home. I think that comes into play. It's still Patriots.
Totally agree with you. I give it to the Patriots, and the reason I'm going is the Patriots defense. You probably have the defensive player of the year over there in Gilmore. You know, you have an offense that's adequate enough to do what it is that they need to do right now, even though it's this late in the season and Tom hasn't been playing like Tom. And the quarterback for the Bills, I'm not sold on him. He's consistent. and inconsistent with some of his throws at times that are wide open. The running back yesterday we saw, Singletary, he fumbled the ball twice. Why wouldn't – if they get Frank Gore in there, I think they need to get Frank Gore in there more. They give him a better opportunity, at least somebody that has more ball security. Because, you know, you come into you playing the Patriots, the first thing they're going to do is rip at the ball for you know, for Singletary. And, you know, he coughed that thing up twice. So I'm not sold on Buffalo because you just beat a Steelers team that, you know, turned the ball over four times and you come away with a seven-point victory.
I'm going to third that with a third no. They're not better than the Patriots today. We just came out.
These timely calls. That's your new thing.
We just came out of a segment talking about culture over talent. Talent-wise, this Bills team is probably better than the Patriots. Talent-wise. Top to bottom, it's debatable.
I can hear that, especially defensively.
But culturally speaking, the Bills are light years away from culturally being ready and being able to do what they need to do to go into Gillette Stadium and beat the Patriots. I think it's a very simple explanation.
I disagree with all three of you.
Yeah, I knew somebody.
With all three of you. The Bills' defense is for real. Yeah. This was my first, and again, yeah, it was Duck Hodges and the Steelers all didn't no Juju, no all the weapons gone. This Tre'Davious White or that's dude's for real. Love the way he played. Mm-hmm. He's gonna turn Tom Brady over. The Bills, I think, are gonna win this Sunday. I think Saturday. I think they have two essential elements: a great defense that can choke out this Patriots offense, and they got a quarterback that can run the
Bills
football.
Don't win that game if the Steelers continue to run the ball instead of trying to put it into Hodges' hands and having him throw, and throwing at one of the better cornerbacks in the game is not really a good idea. They were running the ball at a good tote, but they were looking for chunks. They wanted chunks. Instead of 3-4 yards in a cloud of dust, it's nothing wrong with that. You do that twice, you do that three times, they get you a first down.
James, I want to politely say we're not talking about the Steelers right now. We're talking about
I understand what you're saying.
And I get your
That's why I don't believe they are better than the Patriots right now.
This Saturday, they're going to prove right.
Bet.
Josh Allen. Yeah, we definitely got to bet.
Here we go.
Josh Allen can – the Patriots have a little problem with a running quarterback. I think the Bills are going to run Josh Allen a little bit more than usual. And then their defense, Tre'Davious White and that defense, are going to choke Tom Brady out. Tom Brady's on fumes right now. People are sitting there right now.
Right.
And
give me
people
those
are
fumes.
Saying right now, oh, my God, Brady led the Patriots. I'm like, did you watch the game?
Yes.
Brady was mediocre at best. That defense and Stephon Gilmore carried Brady across the finish. And Tom Brady, I love you. I'm not trying to disrespect you, but you're 42 and you're starting to fall off a cliff. And the Bills are going to gently push him over the cliff on Saturday. The spread is 6.5. I'm going to pay for some more Christmas thanks to the Patriots getting clown-suited by another team with a running quarterback and a good defense.
I don't do spread.
Huh?
Well, no, we don't do spread. You know, it's funny because of the burst. I hated this argument when you play in the league. As soon as a running back have his 30th birthday, oh, he's sorry all of a sudden if he has a bad game after. We look at Tom Brady, he's 42. Oh, he's sorry, falling off a cliff. Okay, I know that's age appropriate, right? But look, we got a young, second-year quarterback in Josh Allen. The last four games, he kind of fallen off a cliff as well. No one's making mention of the fact that 62 quarterback rating, 65 quarterback rating, 146 yards, 139 yards, 185 yards. And we're not going to say he fall off a cliff because he's young. But he ain't helping this team roll like such. And when you talk about a team that doesn't put up points and they're going to go against the Patriots in that defense and you're doing this against lesser defenses, let's talk.
It's going to be an ugly little 17-10 game that falls the Bills' way.
Oh, last time that didn't go their way.
No, it's going to fall their way this time because they're going to turn Tom Brady over and give themselves field position and a couple of field goals and whatever.
You are the definition of like a degenerate gambler that just wants to lose money on teams that you should not bet on. They are not going to beat
the Patriots.
He said
you have a problem.
The last three times I've bet against the Patriots, I've won.
Ooh.
The last three
times. That's how they get you in Vegas.
How many times before that did you win?
It doesn't matter. I'm just telling you what's going to happen this weekend with Josh out. He's a running quarterback.
Where the game at?
It's in Gillette.
15-1 at home against the Bills.
Hey. What was the last game where I said this and they went into Gillette?
Listen, how many times you've been saying that, though? You was right one time out of what, 50?
Ooh.
They saying you the Tom
Brady.
All
I gotta be is right is one more time. All I can do is play the game, the next game up.
That's how Tom Brady
If we talking about percentages, then you way off.
That's how Tom Brady
That ain't even good in baseball.
Y'all sitting around, they beat the big. Tom Brady barely completed half his passes for 100 and some odd yards.
Like Josh Allen.
I'm not sitting here saying, they beat
the Bengals. They don't win with Josh Allen. They win with Tom Brady, or used to win with Tom Brady. Now it's all the defense. Bill's defense gonna put it on. We gotta go. But we bet. Joined once again by LeVar Arrington and James Harrison. Time now for the most fearless discussion in sports. Let's go to Arizona, where the Browns were embarrassed by the lowly Cardinals yesterday, 38-24. It was a forgettable effort from Cleveland, who saw OBJ drop an easy pass and Jarvis Landry get into a heated argument with Freddie Kitchens after the game. The first-year head coach talked about his status in Cleveland.
I don't care about my future as a Brown coach. I'm going to show up Monday, and I'm going to do the best job that I can do Monday. I'm pretty sure that ownership and John Dorsey would like for me to do my job and keep my head down and keep working, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm not worried about anything else other than that.
All right, it's been a disaster in Cleveland. Should it cost Freddie Kitchens his job?
No, it shouldn't, actually. If you look at him and judge him amongst his peers, let's grade him on a curve. Let's talk about rookie head coaches, not just first-year coaches, because then you got to throw Bruce Arians in the mix, who is a two-time coach of the year. But let's just talk about the seven coaches who are coaching the first time in the NFL. He has the second most wins of all those guys. So if you talk about that relative scope, and we know how bad it's been in Cleveland for so many years. Last year, it was a seven-win team. They're on pace. We'll see. They have the potential to win eight games, which would be a one-game improvement. But all that said, with all the disastrous things that have occurred this year, you talk about lack of chemistry offensively, especially between OBJ and Baker Mayfield. You talk about the incidents on the field and lack of discipline. Whatever you want to say, if this is stabilizing in Cleveland, this is something to build on, because you need these guys to come back humbled with consistent messaging and consistent philosophy. Worst thing you could do in Cleveland right now is say, we want everybody to come back next year and do better. Oh, by the way, learn something new. I think that will put them behind the eight ball.
Oh, well, I think he has to go. The answer is yes, and it's out of necessity. You have to believe in the person that's leading. And I don't think that there's enough pimpin' with Kitchens at this moment where there's a belief to be able to bring those big personalities together. You know, interesting thing, my thought process was all the talent that was put together, added to this team coming into the season. Everybody talked about Super Bowl run for this Cleveland team. Even if you can't coach, even if you're not that good of a coach, if you can't win at a rapid clip with that amount of talent, you're not ready to be a head coach. There are teams out there. We talk about New England all the time and their demise and this, that. They are still a team that has only lost, two games, three games? They're still marching the same exact way they were marching last season. You have all this talent in Cleveland, and you can't even get them on the page enough to have a chance to win the NFC or the AFC North. I think you got to get a proven guy in there that can lead this team and pull the personalities together.
But they still are marching on that pace, though, last year.
I definitely agree with him. The thing that made me say get rid of him is the I don't care. You could have used a different wording other than I don't care, even though you came behind and said, I'm going to come in Monday. And when you look at it, he wore the shirt Pittsburgh started. That is not what a head coach would wear and want to represent towards, his players that are, supposed to be looking up to him. You have, you have Baker. It looks like he's regressing. I think the reason Baker is regressing, he has a quarterback coach that is, I believe, Ryan Lindy. He was a GA for San Diego State. He went from running backs coach to now quarterback coach. And now you're seeing Baker, who is supposed to have been the most accurate quarterback, coming out in the draft, having the most inaccurate throws that you've seen in the longest. So, and that's another knock towards what their consistency is as far as the people that they bring in and they hire. You need someone proven. You don't need a 30-year-old GA coach that was in San Diego State 2 years ago being your quarterback's coach.
You make an excellent point in terms of a coach. A lot of times a head coach is judged by the staff he can attract and put together. And if he's got an unqualified staff, it's a bad reflection on him. The other reason why I say he's got to go mostly is just there's been too much buffoonery. From Myles Garrett getting suspended for the year to all every weekend there's something wrong with OBJ to just the way they trick off games with just dumb stuff. It's all a reflection on Freddie Kitchens. I wish him well. I wish he had been the right guy. But I would clean house starting with Freddie. I put OBJ on the trading block next and then try to put a coach in there that commands the kind of respect that can lead a talented team and can get Baker Mayfield back on top because they can't. Baker Mayfield's had a terrible year. I know Colin Cowherd is delighted and just been proven right that Baker. But they give up a first-round pick. They went a number one overall pick for Baker. It's can't give up on him, and you got to put him in a better scenario, a better situation, a better culture than what Freddie's been able to create.
I think he's going to lose public opinion in terms of some of the antics, the shirt, all that. But it's funny that when Bill Belichick first wore the hoodie, there was criticism of that as well, except, you keep winning these damn Super Bowls, so the hoodie's good. So I understand that it's all a performance-based, result-based situation. But he's winning. So far, they've won 6 games. So what if they go 8-8? The same Belichick who was in the same situation, that organization, only one time surpassed that record in 5 years. So is this – what are you going to grade him on? Are you going to grade him on his low points? Are you going to grade him on actually the relative experience of being a Cleveland Brown coach and most have failed? What did our boy Hugh Jackson do out there? 3-36-1, and that was a failed experience. Belichick, 4 of the 5 seasons, 7 or fewer games won. If you want to respect where he is and what he's trying to do, you might give him more credit than it sounds like we are.
All right, Darnell, did anyone win this weekend Super 6?
No jackpot winners went live, but congrats to the 222 fans that walked away with some cash in their pockets.
Oh,
be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win.
Joined once again by LeVar Arrington and James Harrison. Let's talk Spygate 2.0. Mm-hmm. Jay Glazer dropped a bombshell on Fox's NFL Sunday show, revealing he had the video of a Patriot staffer videotaping the Bengals sideline last weekend. The league says it is investigating, but in the meantime, here's what it sounded like when Bengals security confronted a Patriots videographer who said he was shooting a special about a Patriots advanced scout. Take a listen.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advanced scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advanced scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. It's my bad.
That's not the field.
I believe that. That's
why you would think you could take that.
I didn't know. But I can delete this right here for you.
Damage is done, my friend.
No, it isn't, because we delete it.
But I can delete this right here.
I was about to say.
Even had the New England accent.
Awesome.
Should Bill Belichick be suspended for Spygate 2.0?
No, not at all. Not based on that. Yeah. I didn't learn anything new from that. You really think that's Bill Belichick's muscle right there? Like, Bill Belichick is connected to that guy. Yeah, that guy who didn't know he was filming the sideline. I just can't find the smoking gun and connection of those two. If you can, fine. The most profound thing that happened was actually the introduction to this video. If you saw Jay Glazer, he said he saw Spygate 1 tapes, which I didn't think anyone saw because of the burning of those tapes. That would be mind-blowing. But what I saw right here, which is just, hey, a lazy broadcast camera at best and show me what anybody in that 80,000-seat stadium can see, I can't indict Bill Belichick for this.
When you watch a movie, sometimes you got to look a whole lot closer to see what you missed when you watched the movie. And you catch it like that third, fourth, fifth, even sixth time
Matrix.
You watch that movie, right?
Yeah.
Again, I made the point, yes, he should be suspended. And if not, it should be again, if the penalties are harsh, you take a draft pick along with the other penalties of draft pick, fines, 1-game suspension. Because obviously, whatever it is, I'm not going to try to figure out what it is that's on that footage. It was purposely driven, them taking that footage. I don't care if anybody debates it. It was purposefully done. Now, with that being said, Why are you going to say suspend the coach? Because I think it has to. There has to be that moment where you say, we fined you. We spanked you.
Just what you got to realize, though, that department that is filming that is like a social media production type department.
But they don't talk out of it.
They don't talk to the actual people, football operation people that actually film and get film study. Those are two different groups.
You've been indoctrinated.
I highly doubt. I'm not indoctrinated. Believe me, I know they. I believed by my heart and soul they cheated us in 2004 when they came back at the AFC Championship game and hit us on like 80-something percent of our blitzes.
Yep.
He checking out of everything under the sun. Mm. Okay. But with this right here, it's two different areas. You know what I'm saying? And when you have football operations that actually film like games and get you that for, those are two different departments.
Yes.
I highly doubt these people even knew they were breaking a rule until they was like, no, you can't do that. He's like, what?
That's how he sounded.
Right. Like, what? I can't do this. Okay, look, I'll delete it. I didn't know I couldn't do this. He's there to get film for what a documentary or whatever it is, doing your job that they were doing. With that being said, I've done filming where you're there for 8 hours, 10 hours of filming, and they use a minute to 2 minutes of that.
Mm. Yeah, okay? I agree
so
with you on that point.
With that being said, if you're trying to get actual signals, you shoot it from the other
but
side.
That's the point, see.
Face first, where you can see his hands. You can't see anything behind these
you
dudes.
You don't know what you don't know. They may not have been shooting it
listen,
for
I'm with signals. You. They deserve a punishment, a penalty, but suspending the coach is not it.
Yeah.
And the reason they're going to get the reason they're going to get penalized, and it has to be stiffer, but suspending the coach is not going to be it. It should not be it.
Why?
Because they have a record of doing it.
Isn't the purpose of punishment?
It's not that group.
To deter.
It's the same organization. True statement.
Yes. Look,
but it's, you had a scout.
The punishment is to deter future behavior.
Okay.
The thing that will deter future behavior is sitting Belichick down. That will hurt Kraft, that will hurt the organization, and it will never happen again.
Okay, so they give him a one-game suspension. You say one game, right?
Yep.
They give him the last game. You happy with that? Does that hurt them? Last game against Miami. That hurts him.
Here's the reason
if you want to do a show-me campaign, that'll be the show-me campaign they'll give to you just to keep you satisfied and everybody else
but
out
here's,
there.
Here's the reality.
It's not real.
It is real if you're taking all of the other parts of the penalty. And the harshest parts of the penalty are going to be taking a draft pick away.
No.
I
think it is. How is that harsh down when you're and taking his check for that week, the same as they did you, the same as they do on Burfict, the same as they do everybody else. Sit the man down. Playing time is the only thing athletes and coaches understand. Remove playing time. And
but you have to prove he knew and had knowledge of this,
I
don't believe he had.
I have to prove that he created this culture. And this culture, again, whether he's involved or not. It's
so
like
do
mob,
you believe that person
like a
that...
mob boss. Don Corleone didn't say, hey, I want you to go rob this place. He created a culture. Bring me that envelope.
So 2007, when they first got caught.
Bring me the envelope.
When they first got caught in 2007, you believe that these are the same video people from 2007 that are now taking...
Okay,
he don't know.
Can you please connect this to football operations and then I hear you? I understand the culture and
the
conspiracy. The advanced scout was not on that.
It's Robert Kraft's production company, third-party company
but
for Robert Kraft.
Under that umbrella are non-football operations as
people
well.
That don't even know the rules. You got people on
they
that.
Don't need
oh, you
to
got
know.
People that's filming that probably don't even know.
Ignorance of the law is not an
and that's why they need to be punished.
They need
to be punished.
And you got to punish somebody that matters.
No.
Going and getting
you're
going to
punish somebody that doesn't have any responsibility for it now.
Someone who took the access they were given and took luxury.
I'm going to tell my people
access. Now everyone has to go, or you have to find a figurehead to indict in this situation versus that direct person who took that access.
Especially if it happened in the same place.
Or that department itself.
Especially if it happened in the same place.
He already got suspended. That's not enough for you? You want more flesh?
No, I want Belichick. I want something
why?
That deters the
behavior. Who got suspended? The guy who did it.
Yeah,
the guy.
Right. So again,
very
he could have been filming. He could have been filming, just like you said, with total ignorance. Did not know that he was filming.
Right.
This is on his sheet. Get the Bengals sideline. He doesn't have to know why he's filming the Bengals sideline.
Yeah.
You may not know. You don't know. I don't know.
But there was a purpose behind filming that.
Right.
Sideline.
He said the purpose was.
Bingo.
No, there's no reason.
He said the purpose was the scout that was looking at the field. This is the thing.
This is what he looks for.
So we need B-roll. He's looking at this substitution.
Knowing that it's against the rules.
He don't know that.
He doesn't know that.
He got clearance. He don't know that. He's got clearance to come in here and videotape what he wants to see.
Have you ever heard there's a term called useful idiot?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what you're saying is that he's a useful idiot.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm
saying I want the puppet masters that sent that useful idiot in there punished. And Bill Belichick is the puppet master of that organization. If not him, it's Bob Kraft. And the way to hurt Bob Kraft is to sit Belichick
down. Okay, so sit Belichick for a game. Hey, listen, sit Belichick for a game to give him to show me that you punishing them for the Miami game. That's what Roger go do, and then everything be good.
It's
right?
A pike on the head experience.
You happy with that?
Yeah, I am.
That's
as long as he gets suspended and they take his check
that's
away
from him. That's just as bad as
I'm
them
good.
Trying to set up a workout for Kaepernick. Who in the world have they ever
here we go.
Have they
here
ever did
go.
That
here
for
go.
Anybody?
You just compare Belichick to Kaepernick.
Oh, here you go. Here you go.
Come it up.
Compare the two.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Dak Prescott. But first, who's your big dummy of the day?
Sosa.
Woo!
Big dummy of the day go to the person that said that the Cleveland Browns is tricking off their whole season. How many seasons you done tricked off since relocating to Vegas, Whitlock?
I'm not touching that. All right, let's talk some Dak Prescott. The Cowboys game got off to a bizarre start with Dak Prescott appearing to bungle the opening coin toss. Eventually, the league stepped in and said he clearly asked to defer, avoiding any issues. Marcellus, was the coin toss fiasco something or nothing?
Oh, it's something. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. You see all the Rams guys laughing because there's some anxiety and responsibility that comes with a coin toss. I remember being captain, and you go out there, and you're like, defer, kicking, receiving here. No, we're going to go that way and defend this way. And sometimes you can botch it. Sometimes you get a little crosswire. So I'm surprised it doesn't happen often.
It's nothing. I'm not going to make fun of Dak. It was nothing. It can happen to anybody.
It does happen.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what did you think about the coin toss fiasco and Dak Prescott?
Hey, man, they pull this mess on black athletes all the time.
Oh, here we go.
Man, I'm out. Always talking about they don't understand what a brother talking about.
There's some truth to that.
And this is why I stand before you today to say that the so-called league needs more black referees. Y'all might not have known this.
Yeah.
But, you know, ever since I done moved to L.A., I done became bi.
What?
Bi?
Bilingual.
Oh.
Bilingual. Okay.
Bilingual. I done became very fluent in city, country, and pig Latin. Watch, check this out, check this out.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, Uye is a Igbe as a Ehe Ilike Elway. Every day.
Snoop?
That mean, bro, you as big as a killer whale every day. See?
No.
Look, man, I'm trying to tell you, we done seen this type of foolery before. You know, remember they did this back in the day to Jerome Bettis?
They did get Bettis.
Huh?
They got
Bettis. Remember the ref, he came out to flip the coin?
Yeah.
And now the ref assumed that because he looked like he was from Mississippi, and he got that great big old, you know, that voice that came out of him, threw him off a little bit. Jerome came out and said, we'll take tails. Ref looked at him and said, you want heads? Jerome like, no, I said we want tails. Look, man, he just got that voice.
Yeah.
Throw you off.
Throw you off.
You know, you ain't looking for that to come out of him.
Got you.
What you
wanted
to come out?
Look, man, the ref heard what they wanted to hear.
And you would fix this?
Look at man, this same thing happened to Dak. Y'all know Dak from Mississippi. Now look, Fox's esteemed Mike Pereira, he's on hand to deal with the rules.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You need to put Uncle Jimmy up there to deal with the words. Now see, this is the reason our very own Dark Ellis will never have this problem. He always uses them big words. You see him on the show, he'd be like, achievation without deviation is how you achieve maximum levitation. And I talk about that in chapter 3 of my book, Big Dog. All right, anyway, back to my point.
What is your point?
Look, man, y'all know Uncle Jimmy is the all-knowing voice of the peoples.
Yeah.
All right.
So see, and look, tell me, what brother, when you get questioned by a bunch of white folks, you don't get a little nervous?
Hey,
you know,
man,
white folks get to ask you that question. Dak was like, the defense, when we came, I didn't kick nobody, but then, but if they came out again, I want to defer, you know?
Coin toss.
Look at, man, y'all know how people do, man. They put a bunch of words at the beginning. All you got to pay attention to is what they say at the end. Mm. That's kind of like this show with your big, long, solidified Whitlock. Don't nobody care about that. They tune into the last 5 minutes to hear Uncle Jimmy say what Whitlock was talking about.
Gotcha. I'm going to my approval rating for Dak
I'm just trying
Prescott.
To tell you what God like.
I'm just trying to tell you what Dak Prescott got him at a 58, a role player, up 2 points, there really no change.
Yeah, yeah.
Dak's the same guy that I've been saying ever since about week 5.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. What do you have? Season lows in terms of attempts and yardage and probably their best win. That's not a good formula, so I'm with you right there, bro.
All right, the internet has him at an all-star, slightly ahead of us.
Give him that.